Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, sponsored by SeeRadioDifferently.com. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Robin Hicks.
This week,
Kyle Sanderland does it again.
Qantas gets its pyjamas in a twist.
ACP still loves print, launching not one, but two new women's magazines.
But it's bad news for regional papers as APN swings the axe.
The ABC and Nine reveal their plans for 2012.
With us today in the studios of CBS Interactive is Encore Managing Editor Brooke Hemphill.
Hello.
And Mediacom CEO Toby Jenner.
Hi.
So we should probably start, Toby, by having a bit of a chat about what, you've been up to, what Mediacom's been up to. Firstly, you've been there. Now, I always underestimate, whenever I talk to people, how long they've been. So I was going to estimate 2 years, but probably that means you've been here a bit longer than that.
I've been CEO for 2 years and at Mediacom for just north of 3.5 now.
Well, there you go. I've underestimated. What are the main things that you guys have been up to recently? Let's start with a couple of wins that you've been able to announce this week.
Well, we've recently won Westpac, which again you probably know about, and we take that on from December 1. We're delighted that.
Have you had to staff up for that one?
We had a lot of the people in place who'll be working on that business, but as ever, you know, it's a large piece of business with a number of very defined brands across Australia as a whole, so not just in New South Wales with St George and Westpac, but Bank of Melbourne and Bank SA. So real national coverage there, which we're thrilled with. We announced yesterday that we won Football Federation Australia, which is fantastic, a real iconic brand there, and in Ben they've got great leadership and are really going places.
And that's it's a tough one in Australia, isn't it, sort of just taking football to the next level, because they sort of reshaped it and sort of pushed it forward in the last sort of, I guess, 4 or 5 years. But it's where it goes from here, you know, in terms of audience support.
Yeah, well, I think the likes of Harry Kuehl coming back, Brett Emerson coming back, will see average crowd increase in the 2011-2012 season, which is fantastic news for the entity itself. The Qantas Socceroos are performing well, which again ensures that the grassroots coming through. You know, it's being played in a lot more schools now. You talk to most kids, they tend to be playing soccer or football, as I prefer. So I think the future is bright, and they've got some great, you know, corporate sponsors in Hyundai and Qantas.
And have you yet adopted yourself an Australian football team?
Well, it would be Sydney, absolutely,
as your home. Have you been to any games yet?
I have. I've been to see Sydney. Yeah, I saw them play Melbourne last year, which was interesting. It's good quality football. I just think it's slower.
We're putting together a publication called the Mumbrella Annual, which is basically a sum up of the best and worst of 2011 in terms of Australia's media and marketing landscape. Within that publication will be a media agency of the year that we're awarding. Mm-hmm. I just wondered, you know, obviously Mediacom would be in with a shout. What's your sort of argument as to why Mediacom should be media agency of the year?
Oh, that's a good question.
There's a number of reasons. Firstly, there's a lot of good agencies out there, so, you know, just to be considered is always nice. I think the cultural component of our business is incredibly strong and increasingly the cornerstone of the success we have.
That's the people first positioning, right?
Yeah, and for us, we have minimal churn in our business now. Actually, I've just been looking at the numbers. We've only lost 8% of our team to competitive agencies. Our total churn is about 17-18% versus an industry average of 37%.
Mm, yes.
So with that consistency and stability, it enables you to do great work. And I think it's great work which has kept, on the whole, you know, all our clients within our business across 2011, and enabled us to grow the business and win additional clients, whether that's new business, as I call it, such as a Westpac, such as a FFA, EA, Electronic Arts, or Bayer, or whether it's increased assignments from existing clients, which again I think goes to show the strength of relationship that we have with our current client base, such as Macquarie, where we've won all their search, and Digital, or HCF, where we've won their search. I think, you know, win the business, keep the business you've got, you're not going to go far wrong. I think it enables us ultimately to reward our staff. You know, we paid $1 million bonus to the company as a whole in March or April of this year, you know, on average $6,000 a head. So reinvesting back into the business, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And who would be on your shortlist for Media Agents of the Year? Who of your rivals do you think's had a really good year?
Who do you not like to go up against on pitch lists?
No one. I'm comfortable pitching against anyone. I think there are agencies who've done well. I think Icon continues to do well. I think they're a strong business. Culturally, very strong. And I think they deserve the plaudits they get. Other than Icon, I think it's been a fairly of the same year rather than anyone really standing out, to be honest.
Mindshare, PhD in with a shout, you think? Mindshare obviously won Unilever. PhD have been doing some good work, although they're smaller in size.
Have they? Okay, I'll take your word for that. I haven't seen a great deal of PhD's work this year since Mark left, who is undoubtedly a great talent and a great loss for Australia. Mindshare obviously are a sister company, so yeah, I endorse Mindshare being up there.
In the time that you've been running the agency, how has it changed? What have been the biggest changes?
Well, it's been a complete reinvention. We've got what I consider to be the best leadership team in Australia, 15 people who run the business with me. Of those 15, the vast majority are new or in different roles. So it has been a complete reinvention, and we are pleased with where we've got to, what we've done. I think there's a lot more to be done, and we're certainly not complacent.
Well, let's talk about some of the work. What recent stuff are you kind of proud of?
The work that we're probably most proud of, well, the Pepperjack work we won the MFA for, we're thrilled with.
Talk us through that one.
Well, that was the realisation that how you connect red wine into a habitual day-to-day environment and linking it with going out for dinner, and you know, that truism, and like most great pieces of work, that genuine insight that, you know, red wine, red meat's a great combination, and we fueled that. I think, like a lot of agencies, you go through cycles, and the new work that we're producing, the work we've just done for Skoda from a social perspective, where we literally took $28,000 and gave 5 cars out to 5 well-known bloggers and got them to basically talk about the car. There was nothing contrived. It was over to them.
Some VW stuff you've got breaking this weekend.
Yeah, the Amarok stuff is great. And I think from a creative perspective, we set ourselves the objective of trying to get a TV show that we created on air by the end of the year, kind of this time last year. And Gemma Newland, who heads MBA, Mediacom Beyond Advertising, has done a great job there with Race to the Rock, which is the VW ute. So you can see that on 1 and 10 over the next 4 weeks. So that's fantastic.
And what's the sort of thinking behind the show?
Well, the thinking behind the show is, quite simply, how do you show to tradies a tough vehicle? Well, the best way to do that is to give it to them and let them experience it over the terrain of Australia. So racing to Uluru, and the journey of that, you know, in the vein of a reality story. So that's a great piece of work.
And another one, Area 52.
Yeah, Area 52 is a follow-up to what's probably been our most successful piece of work in 2010, which was the launch of Alienware and Clan Challenge. And if Clan Challenge was about how you raise Alienware's level of knowledge
now
within...
Now, I'm not a gamer. I don't really know what Alienware is. I'm embarrassed to admit.
Well, if the truth be known, neither am I, Tim. But we will have an education together. So Alienware is the Ferrari of gaming. You know, so the Microsofts and the Sony PlayStations, it kind of puts them in the shade. It can be up to about an $8,000 piece of kit. So it's not for the faint-hearted. But if you're into your gaming, then it's the one to have. And we very much launched that last year to the gaming fraternity, to the kind of hardcore gamers. Last year and this year, it's about extending it out. And that was the story behind Area 52 and the thinking of that piece of content that we launched earlier this year. So that's again a lovely piece of work that it's work that's generating results for our clients. You know, someone went from that and then bought an £8,000 piece of kit and tracked them through. So we're not doing work for awards' sake. We're doing work that drives our clients' business results, and if we win an award on the back of it, fantastic.
And then the TED, your entertainment division.
Yeah, so TED is, we realise that every client requires a different way of working, and we have a lot of entertainment businesses within our portfolio, whether that's Universal Pictures, Universal Music. I mean, they're two wholly separate businesses from the same historical parentage, but they are wholly separately owned. Or whether it's ACP7 or now the FFA or Electronic Arts, they do need to be serviced in a very different way to potentially the way the vast majority of clients are. It's a very, very fast-paced business akin to retail. And that acknowledgement born the entertainment division, which is being headed up by one of our rising stars in Jeff Clark. So we're thrilled that that team is now in place and up and running.
There was a trend at the beginning of the year, agencies, your rivals, and Starcom namely, hiring people from creative agencies and rather fancily had the word creative in their title. So what's going on Mediacom in that vein? Are you looking to add agencies for new talent to add that sort of creative dimension to campaigns?
Yeah, I think as an industry, we're looking anywhere where there's decent talent. You know, we mentioned the churn in the industry of 37%. You know, we have a vacancy rate of 8%. So I think we'd be mad not to consider creative agency talent or PwC or McKinsey or Bain or wherever we can get great talent from, or, some of the best universities in Australia. So, like anyone, we're considering and do actively employ the best talent for our business. It might not be right for everyone's business, but for our business, the best talent. And if that comes from a creative agency, whether it's Gemma, who came from TBWA, or whether it's Nick Hodges, who came from Clem's, we're relaxed.
Mm. And where do you see your biggest threats as a business coming from? I was chatting to Simone Drury from Mango yesterday, and she said she sees very much media agencies being the biggest threat to the PR sector. A few of her people have left and gone to media agencies. Where do you see your biggest threat? Is it the likes of McKinsey?
It's a really good question. I think we as an industry have a number of challenges. I think the biggest challenge, as I've said, is around the people. I don't necessarily think it's around other industries. I think for us, I cannot think of a better time to be in a media agency, comms agency, call it what you will. I just think it's such a rich time for us as a business, and I think if we do what we can and we do it really well, I just think we've got everything at our feet on behalf of our clients. The fact that data is playing such a critical role, the fact that we have got such creative talent within the business, if you can combine those two things, I think you're in a really powerful place. And I think clients should start to appreciate and realise that we can play an infinitely greater role than we have historically. And I think that's the only thing really holding us back. I think every agency has now got such a diversified range of services and offer that actually we can be that central point of contact for our clients. I just think they need to have the confidence that we can deliver for them.
Mm. And what do you see as giving media agencies the edge? I was chatting to someone else the other day that said that it's data that gives media agencies the edge, because it's data, it's the same sort of language that marketers like to speak in.
And where do you come on the data front? Are you in the camp that says data's the new black, or are you in the camp that says that data makes you feel a little bit sick in your mouth, of which I've heard from two different group-ended people?
I think data is a fundamental part of our business, no more or less so than anything else. I think data for data's sake is talking about it as the new black. I think it has an absolutely fundamental role to play, but I think data on its own is just data. I think it's how you use the data, and I think it's marrying the creativity of our industry with data that makes it truly powerful.
So that sounds like you're in Team Greet rather than Team Gains then.
I'm in Team Jenner. And I think...
no one's going to dispute that.
I'm actually in Team Mediacom, and I think the point around that is why we went out and hired Andy Littlewood as Chief Data and ROI Officer, and I don't see anyone else having made that kind of hire or brought that talent into the business. So, you know, I'm fairly comfortable where we are around data and where Mediacom is. But as I say, it is the fusion of data and creativity and not one or the other that I think will excites clients, and it's certainly exciting us.
Next, Kyle's in trouble again. Kyle Sanderlands is at the centre of another media storm after the shock jock used his radio show to launch a vicious on-air attack on a News Limited journalist who reported negative viewer comments about Kyle and Jackie O's Night with the Stars. The tirade saw the Today Network presenter describe Alison Stevenson as a piece of shit and warn her to watch your mouth or I'll hunt you down. Rather charmingly, he also attacked the journalist's weight, hairstyle and breast size. Let's take a listen.
Some fat slag on Telegraph website, news.com.au, branded it a disaster.
A disaster?
You can tell by reading the article she just hates us and always hated us. And she trawled through the Twitter comments and pulled out all the bad comments and ran them. What a fat bit of thing you are. You're deputy editor of an online thing. That's enough. You got a nothing job anyway. Just so you know, you're a piece of shit.
Sanderland's comments came after Stevenson reported on poor viewing figures for the chat show, which aired on 7 on Monday night. They were broadcast in Sydney and created a media backlash that saw news.com.au's editor-in-chief David Pemberthy leap to his colleagues Stevenson's defence and Holden, Vodafone and the Good Guys pulling ads and sponsorship of the Kyle and Jackie O show. So, Tim, do you think this was an accident waiting to happen?
Partly, yes, because clearly Kyle Sanderland's thrives on controversy. You know, that's part of the persona. And it's worth remembering that some of this is kind of pantomime. You know, it's kind of he's playing the pantomime villain. What I found interesting about this one was how much this became a social media story, as they always seem to, but almost how much it almost didn't happen as well. You know, it's sort of worth looking at the sort of series of events. So we had Monday night, the show went out. You know, I saw part of it, saw enough of it to make a mental note to look at the ratings in some detail the next day, to look at the viewer switch off, because it was so terrible that I thought perhaps there would be a story there. Meanwhile, the news.com.au journalist was watching the Twitter comments that were going on at the time, so she wrote her story about, you know, the public, you know, have put their thumbs down. So the next morning, Kyle goes on air. He was in LA, but 6 a.m. Sydney time, slags off Alison Stevenson with the comments he just heard. Because I guess at that stage there probably weren't many stories talking about, you know, how dreadful the show was, particularly because the ratings hadn't come in at that point. Sort of 2.5 hours later, the overnight ratings came in. It was pretty poor. The story almost ended there, because I was actually trying to get hold of the 15-minute by 15-minute ratings, because that's the one that gives you a signal on what viewers are actually doing within a show. You know, because sometimes a show, the ratings can seem quite good if it's inherited a good audience before, even if it falls away. And it took me a while to get them. You know, I was having to call in a couple of favours to get them. And by the time I did, it was sort of 3:30 or something. And usually by that point, rating story is dead. But it was like, as somebody said in the comment thread, it was like the ski slope at Threadbow. You know, it was that sort of fall. So I posted a story. And again, remember at this point, the comments that Sanderlands had made at 6 a.m. hadn't been picked up by anyone in the media at all. It was like he'd never said them. You know, his audience had heard them, and, you know, I guess seen it as fairly typical, and that was that. I don't think even, you know, the News Limited journalist had heard it. But after we posted the ratings story, Mark Colvin, who presents the PM programme for the ABC, tweeted in response, sort of publicly, but tweeted in response saying, "Did you hear what he said this morning?" and a link to the podcast. Which, again, I missed his tweet at the time, but when I was catching up on sort of mentions 4 or 5 hours later, that was when I followed the link, listened to the podcast, and realised it's quite a big story. So I didn't post the story till 10 p.m. that night. So, you know, you're talking 16 hours after he made the comment. And the moment I tweeted it, it just raced away. Normally at that time of night, if you tweet a story, you're not going to get retweets because everyone's gone to bed. This one just went crazy. You know, we had twice the usual traffic for that day, and it all came in those 2 hours. And then it just began to escalate. And then the next morning, you know, News Limited joined in. David Pemberthy made his comments. The rest of the media sort of jumped on. And towards the end of the day, we started seeing advertisers pull out as people were organising petitions and that sort of thing. Again, all by Twitter, all by social media. You know, it was incredible how much happened in that first 24 hours. Mm. And then I must admit, I thought it would be a 24-hour story. I thought it would be all over. I thought it would die. Thursday morning, I just thought what would happen is they would quickly slip out a quick apology at 2 minutes past six. Kyle would say, look, yesterday or the day before yesterday, I went really over the top. I'm sorry, I went too far. Move on, and story's dead. Instead, it was a long self-justification that, you know, it was words like, if I personally offended you, I'm sorry. You know, that sort of classic non-apology apology. Maybe you'll think next time, you know. So, you know, the story's not dead at all, and we'll probably keep going for a little while yet. And I, you know, it's gone so fast. It's not even, you know, this story is not even 48 hours old as we're chatting now.
Yes.
And it's already racing away.
Yeah, as someone mentioned in the comment thread, perhaps there was method to his madness. Perhaps he said what he did because he knew he'd get an audience the next day with people tuning in to hear his apology or to hear his response. Do you think there's a certain calculation in what he said, in his non-apology apology?
I don't know how much is tied to ego, just that thing that absolutely he can't back down. And, you know, it is addicted to having feuds, and it is good ratings-driving radio, clearly dangerous as well when sponsors get involved. But yeah, I mean, very well-produced show. You know, there's a big production team behind it. The non-apology apology, I heard it played at various points, the same segment, replayed, went out, and then I heard it go out at least twice more as well. So, you know, there's clearly a sort of calculation there to replay it. I'm not quite sure what the next step is. I think probably survive until the end of next week is the end of the ratings period, and then they'll be on holiday until the new year.
Yes.
So I suspect it's going to be about, you know, just hanging on and waiting for the Ferrari to go away.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see the ratings of his next show. Toby, would you have advised brands advertising around his show to stay away, given what he's said?
I think the brands that truly want to be integrated and part of it, you're going to have to... they know what they're getting into. You know, this isn't new news, to Tim's point. You know, it's not like the first time he's caused a furore around a topic. He's obnoxious and one would argue he's either a PR maniac, and he does that for the benefit of his brand or the Breakfast Show brand. So you know what you're getting into, and I think it's one of the great lessons of brands that align with properties. You know, you need to be aware of what you're aligning with, good and bad.
Do you think, assuming if you're a brand, you say, okay, right, we are going to align with the show, do you then need, actually with a show like that, do you actually need a contingency plan before the controversy happens? Because, you know, inevitably there will be a controversy.
Yeah, I think you always have to have a damage limitation, and I think most good brands have that in place anyway. You know, you look at, you know, we mentioned Mango PR agency earlier, you know, very much they that sector of our business, you know, it's a central part of what they do. So yeah, absolutely, you have to have that. And I think also what you have to do is you have to dial up and down, don't you? You know, being an associated part of that brand or that property, you have events that you leverage off the back of it, so you have to be able to ensure that you can dial them up when it's good and just turn it right down when something like this happens.
It strikes me a little bit that it the likes of the brands that have pulled out, Holden, Vodafone, the good guys, isn't it bad strategy? They already aligned themselves with a brand in Carl Sanderlands. They know that's going to say fairly outrageous things. Isn't it? Does it lack a bit of foresight? We saw the same thing earlier on in the year with brands that pulled out of the Bolt report. They know what Andrew Bolt's like. They know the sort of things he likes to say. And yet we saw brands pulling out. It seems that they've sort of wasted their money or have had a misguided strategy.
Yeah, look, I don't know the details behind the individual brands and why they are being part of the Kyle and Jackie O show, I would observe that they may well just be buying the audience rather than what the audience is there to listen to. So,
yes, there's a difference being being a genuine sponsor and being an advertiser.
Correct. And I think if they're going, right, this is the number one breakfast show in the morning, we want to see large audiences connected with our brand, that's one thing. To then fully integrate and be a more integral part of that property is a slightly different mechanic. And I don't know what their strategies are, so I can't comment on that. But I would observe that if you want to be the latter, which is infinitely more powerful, then you need to think twice as hard about which properties you're aligning to.
If you happen to have clients who happened to be having their ads actually running on the breakfast show at the moment, just as advertisers but not as sponsors, would your advice to be to dial back, shift it to another time slot, hold over the ads for a couple of weeks until things calm down? Or because, you know, what we're seeing is anyone who's advertising at the moment coming under heavy scrutiny on Twitter.
Yeah, or getting twice the audience that they probably normally would because it's the normal furore around Carl Sanderland. So, look,
So you'd stick?
You're damned if you do, damned if you don't, really, aren't you? I think the point is that this isn't new news. You know, if you're going to be in that show, you, as someone who offers professional advice, will always say to your clients, this is what could happen. Because it could happen at any time, any day, and you can't do anything about it because it's, you know, near a damn it live radio or live radio.
It's a bit unfair to ask this off the top of your head, but you know, just out of curiosity, if you do know, do you know if any of your brands do support the show?
Well, I'm sure we have. You know, we're a big agency, so we'll certainly have had or have currently ads going out in the breakfast show. I don't know off the top of my head, though, Tim. No, but you know, we're 15% of the market, so the likelihood is we will have. And I've got every confidence that we'll be talking to our individual clients and ensuring that they're across what's happening.
Next, Qantas gets itself into a social media pickle.
Qantas this week found itself facing a huge social media backlash after a competition inviting Twitter followers to win a pair of first-class pyjamas by tweeting their idea of luxury turned into an opportunity for angry customers to share their gripes. Within minutes of the Qantas luxury hashtag going up, it was filled with customers venting their spleen about the airline, which grounded its fleet earlier this month as part of the industrial dispute. The latest social media disaster comes just weeks after Qantas was forced to apologise for running a Twitter competition in which it gave two sports fans free tickets, and they then went blackface. Robin, I'm not sure I'm seeing much evidence of lessons being learned there.
No, absolutely not. It was a case of trying to claw back goodwill too soon after the grounding, and I don't think it really worked. As to why, I mean, I've had a number of dealings with their PR team. To be honest, I don't mean to be too rude, but it strikes me as the sort of advertiser, sort of brand they are.
I tell you one thing I thought, and I think you're being right when you're saying they're not being too rude. One thing I noticed when the original stuff was going on, and we didn't, some of it was quite personal, so we didn't publish all the comments. But I remember a lot of comments appeared in the sort of back end in our comment stream from journalists who just clearly did not like the Qantas PR team and had run-ins. So I wonder whether there's an element of score settling for media a little bit as well. For whatever reason, they're seen as a PR team that's hard to deal with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The sense that I got is they're an almost like a government-style PR team that's that not particularly collaborative, brusque, fairly surly, and not particularly helpful and slow.
Apart from that, they're brilliant.
Yeah, apart from that, they're excellent. And this way they've handled this social media storm is to just charge on regardless and not really think about the consequences.
I was slightly amused. Sorry, we're doing a bit of Qantas score settling here, but I was amused. Robin had a slightly cross call from the PR because he rang lots of people when you were chasing the Qantas pitch story. So, you know, she made it clear that she wanted one phone call and that was enough. So I did try that experiment in the afternoon with this Qantas one, and I just left a voicemail saying, can we talk about it? I didn't mention I was actually going on Sunrise the next morning to talk about it as well, which they might have seen slightly more relevant than talking to Umbrella. And of course, they never returned my call. So sadly, I wasn't able to put Qantas aside of it when I was asked about it on Sunrise. But
yes.
No, dreadful, yes. Dreadful.
Yeah, it. I mean, it's very much a brand that was up on a pedestal in terms of how the Australian public views it, regards it, respects it. But as James Wright from the Red Agency says now, after the grounding, it's just become another airline, hasn't it? It's just another airline that has to face up to the consequences of a very competitive environment, and I'm not sure it's doing quite well in handling itself in social media.
Now, speaking of the Qantas pitch, Toby, you're on the pitch list, so I suspect that you might be a bit limited in what you can say about this story, but maybe let's sort of speak with the positives. What's been the experience of the pitch process thus far?
I'm clearly not going to get into a tirade about Qantas. And actually, the pitch process, I would normally just say, yes, it's been very good, very professional. I have to say it's been the best, and I've done a hell of a lot of pitching. It has been the best I've been involved in. The time, effort and energy that they, as a marketing team led by Lewis, has put in to engage with the agencies, whether that's media, creative, digital, has been second to none. The briefing that we had Monday afternoon of this week was exceptional, and I think it makes you all the more hungry to work with them as a business. And yes, they have got their challenges, as you two have highlighted, but certainly,
and it's worth making the point that PR is a separate team to the marketing team as well.
Correct. And I think, as I say, from what I've seen and what they're trying to do as a marketing team, it has been exceptional.
When it comes to, and this, again, let's just talk generally because I don't want to get you into trouble. When it comes to the voice of a brand in social media, is that something that more naturally sits with, do you think, a marketing voice or a PR voice?
Depends who you're asking. I think if you ask any PR agency, the lines have blurred immeasurably across everything, and to that point we spoke about earlier, that's why I think media is such a fascinating and great place to be at the moment. 10 years ago, PR did PR, which meant if you can get me a few stories in print, that would be great, and media did media. Now, with the advent of technology and social media, there is a huge overlap, and I, and you'd expect me to say this as a media or comms practitioner, believe that if you've got a central idea of how you should communicate the brand, that everything should spin off that. Now, that doesn't say that PR shouldn't then have that central idea and ensure they best communicate it, but I do think that central idea, can start with or at the comms agency more likely than the PR agency. But again, a good idea can come from anywhere. But I think it's more natural that it sits within our
Sorry,
business.
Toby, I just wanted to take a step back to the Qantas brief. Obviously, you can't give any detail, no. But why were you impressed by the brief itself? What was it about? Was it very well written? Was it well constructed? What was it about that struck you about that brief?
It was concise. It was, well, I'll give you a bit of background, and hopefully I won't contravene any NDAs that I've signed. We went as a collective into an auditorium. We took the brief. There was a lot of good background. As I say, it was very concise. The screen went up, the curtains went back, and they took us into their kind of training zone for Qantas staff. So there was an area where there was all the economy seats, business, first class. There were cabins. There were lounges. They allowed us to experience what the Qantas brand on a great day is all about. And I just think, given what they're going through at the moment, regardless of that, to have the time and the effort that they've put into that, I think shows a business that's serious about wanting the very best partners as it looks to address some of the challenges it currently has. And I applaud that, because a lot of clients will either just send you a brief and they don't engage. And that was a really good example of how a client has engaged. And as a result, and having spoken to a couple of agencies, not just media, but creative as well, they are really hungry to do a great job.
Next, women's mags are back in fashion.
Australia's magazine market is to make room for two new women's titles, Elle and Women's Fitness. Fashion mag Elle is a joint venture between ACP and Hearst and is already published in 43 countries worldwide. Women's Fitness is licensed from Dennis Publishing in the UK and targets female fitness enthusiasts over 25 years old. Both titles will be published monthly with brand extensions online and in mobile. So, Toby, L and Women's Fitness, successful titles elsewhere around the world. Will you be advising your clients to advertise in them?
They're also ACP titles, who are also a client, so absolutely.
But do you think, I mean, there hasn't been a may have been a few launches, magazine launches this year, none that are as big as this, I don't think. What do you think it says about the magazine market now that you've got two fairly brave launches?
I think it says that CVC have ruled over this and they would not be investing in brands that they didn't think they could get a return on. You know, I think it's an incredibly competitive marketplace. And as a result of that, the due diligence that they've gone to ensure that they have a business model. So it's not just ACP themselves.
Some would say, though, that launching any sort of magazine in this market is crazy.
Some would say that, Tim. And I think it's not a growing medium. So whatever the brand does, it will have to attract share from other people. And I think that's clearly what they'll be trying to do. I think the L brand, I know more about L.
Because you experienced it in the UK.
And I'm married to Mrs. Jenner than I do other titles. But that is a fantastic brand. You know, it's a very strong brand in the UK. I wasn't here when Pat Pubs launched it. I don't know how they launched it or why it wasn't as successful as it is in other markets. But certainly, as I say, if you've got the right budget and marketing support behind it, it is a very strong brand and one that I would think could thrive and survive in this market by attracting share from other people rather than growing the overall category.
See, one thing I wondered if some of it is a tactical thing to make it even harder for News Limited to launch Glamour. Would that make sense, do you think?
Absolutely.
And what do you make of Glamour? I mean, when it launched in the UK, it's very successful. The handbag size format went down really well, and it was one magazine that stood out in an ailing category. Do you think when it does arrive, that'll be a success?
It's tough, isn't it? I wonder whether or not the Glamour versus the kind of weekly
Grazia,
more disposable, and how much content you can actually squeeze into it that people haven't already seen before. You know, it is handbag. It was at the time read via the commute, and I'm not sure that's necessarily as relevant in this market as potentially that monthly, more indulgent title that Elle is. Mm. So. Jury's out for me on that one.
Women's Fitness is launching with an iPad app. I just wondered in this day and age whether that might make sense to launch with an iPad app first, or at least test the popularity of a product by going online first and then move on to a print publication.
I think there's any number of ways you can launch the brand, but one of the biggest advertising vehicles you will have is seeing it on a magazine stand. You know, as some of the biggest brands that we have, their biggest channel will be their storefront, branch front, whatever it may be. And I think that's true of magazines as well. So I think that lends itself to driving the business as much as any other channel.
Next, regional newspapers feel the heat up north.
Two of Australia's oldest newspapers will no longer be published daily following a series of cost-cutting moves by regional publisher APN. Tweed's 123-year-old Daily News and the 104-year-old Coffs Coast Advocate will both move to reduced frequency, while free titles The Gold Coast Mail and Robina Mail will be closed in a move that will lead to 35 redundancies. APN Australia regional media CEO Warren Bright said although the audience for paid daily newspapers have been declining, there remains a strong demand from both advertisers and readers for the twice weekly newspapers that the company is retaining, and insisted there were no plans for closures in other markets. Toby, still a place for regional daily publishing, do you think?
It's tough, isn't it? You look at the US, which I think is the most comparable model to Australia, and the amount of local titles that there are is dwindling and closing by the day. I think there is a role for a local community-based channel, whatever that may be. Whether or not it's going to be a published local paper, time will tell. It doesn't look like it.
Robin, where is the pathway, the conveyor belt of young journalists going to come from if papers aren't there as the training ground?
Yeah, good question. I did a bit of work experience at the Coventry Evening Standard many years ago, and I found that the experience invaluable. A bit of court reporting. The Queen was in town, Tony Blair was in town as well, and it's an amazing experience. But I guess these days there's so many outlets for journalism. I mean, write a blog, comment on Facebook. There's so many ways to sort of get into writing and report yourself. I don't see the decline of regionals as blocking opportunity for young journalists.
Next, Nine and the ABC share their plans for 2012.
This week, Nine and the ABC both revealed some schedule highlights for next year. Tim and Brooke were there. First off, Tim, highlights from Nine.
Yeah, so they did it as a Christmas lunch. Of the three big commercial players, 7, 9 and 10, 9 were the last to go to the market. 7 did theirs, gosh, feels like 3 or 4 weeks back now, and 10 a while before then. One of the interesting things is actually it's been 2 or 3 years since I've been to a Nine Up Front's presentation, and one of the things I was struck with were a couple of big differences, one of which was the last one I went to, it was very bombastic. It was very much chest-beating. We're number one, we want a 35 share, all of those things. It was a little bit more humble this time, not totally humble. But the other really interesting thing was it was all about the cross-platform thing. It wasn't just about TV. You know, they gave a really big billing to 9MSN, you know, the online offerings. They gave a really big billing to ACP magazines. And in fact, that was, we were talking about magazines earlier on, that was where that announcement was made. So it felt, you know, I'm not sure that last time around I heard PBL being mentioned at all. PBL has since become Nine Entertainment Co. as the parent brand. And it was much more this cross-platform thing. So lots of talk of Powered, which is their sort of cross-platform brand, and they brought Michael Branner onto the stage for a little speech. He runs Powered, and he came over from Sapient Nitro. So, you know, very different background. There was lots of cross-platform stuff. Gingell didn't talk for very long. I think it was off the cuff, the bit that he did. And really, the messages he were given was, you're going to hear some bad stuff about us next year. And what I think he was talking about was, there's going to be lots of stories around Nine's debt and how it's refinanced. And he was basically sending the message, we're still going to be investing in the content. Olympics is going to be a really big part of it, so they were sort of, you know, talking up the Olympics element, which is fair enough. Not many surprises. We already knew Big Brother was coming. We pretty much guessed Celebrity Apprentice was coming. It already leaked that Sonia Kruger was coming across. So, you know, there wasn't any single moment where you thought, wow, that's brilliant. A few reels look great. Beaconsfield, the movie, if it's half as good as the scissor reel, that's going to be great.
And obviously The Block, which...
Obviously The Block returns.
Arguably the most successful ratings.
Yes, and back to strip TV with The Block, or 7-0 Block, as they call it, they were calling it in the upfront from that. So very much the strategy is going to be having strip stuff at 7 o'clock, The Block for some of the year, Celebrity Apprentice for some of it, probably Farmer Wants a Wife, those sort of things as well. So you know, lots of stuff we've seen before, but I get the feeling it's very much going to be about the Olympics.
Yes. And what about the event itself? Sit next to anyone interesting?
I was lucky enough. Well, my the favourite person on my table, I think, was Jacinta Campbell, the former Miss Australia and Celebrity Apprentice.
Did you get any photos with her?
No, I didn't. No, one or two media folk who I won't name did. I did spot as I was leaving with their arm around her, sort of with a she had a rictus grin anyway. But, but you know, it must have been nice for her to have someone who was as tall as her to talk to.
So, Brooke, you are at the ABC event.
Yes.
Highlights?
Well, obviously the big highlight is Andrew Denton is returning to the front of the camera with his new show, Randling.
Worth explaining what Randling is.
Yes. So what did he say? It's a poem?
It's an obscure... It was something along the lines of an obscure poem recited by Irish schoolboys to apologise for farting in front of their friend.
Correct. Yes.
It's a word game, the show.
Yes. So obviously that will be quite interesting to watch, Andrew Denton coming back in front of the camera. Also, Sean McAuliffe has a new show. Sean McAuliffe is Mad as Hell, which seems like a news analysis show of sorts. The rumour that Annabelle Crabb would have her own show, that has been confirmed, the Kitchen Cabinet, and the Sizzle Reel showed a little bit of a clip of her with sitting down with Penny Wong.
This is cooking with politicians.
Cooking with politicians, yeah, and raiding their kitchen cabinets and so forth.
I kicked myself so much because someone tipped me off about this months ago and I thought it was a joke. So I didn't bother to follow it up because it sounded so ridiculous.
I suppose she's quite personable. And, you know, we had her in for an interview and really charming and lovely. So I imagine she'll be quite good in front of the camera. Another show was Myth Warhurst. She has her show coming out called Nice, where she, as she said, gets to talk to old men with beards, such as Kenny Rogers. They showed a little clip from that. It looks vaguely amusing. And Woodley from Leno and Woodley has a comedy show coming out. A number of different dramas. There's one based around Mabo, which looks quite good.
Sorry, what's Mabo?
Mabo, the Aboriginal land rights. Ah. Yeah, so that's
excuse my lack of Australian knowledge.
Well, there you go. Well, you'll definitely have to watch to bring you up to speed. And that's got Deborah Mailman in that, and she's obviously a very well-known, very well-liked actress.
Yeah. How about the Gruen transfer? Obviously, now the Gruen planet. Any hints as to how they'll sort of reinvent the show for next season?
They didn't mention it at all, but right. It was in the sizzle reel, so right. I suspect that's coming back.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Toby, of that lot, 9 and ABC, any programmes you think that will get media buyers excited?
Well, I think the Olympics. I mean, without doubt, you know, Tim mentioned it. I think the competitive nature of the media agency world is one thing, but then when you get 9 and 10 going at each other, hammer and tongs. But let's ground it in some fact. Traditionally, when the Olympics is aired by a network, they gain an extra point to a point and a half worth of revenue. So if 10 are looking at getting a 30% share, which is an increase of 1-2 points, then I'm not quite sure where that's coming from, because 9 have the Olympics, 7 are ahead of the game. So it's going to make for a very interesting year. I think 9 have had a good back quarter. I think the Apprentice has been fantastic television. We've enjoyed working with them on it, with KFC and Carnival.
There was good. Those are both your clients.
Yeah,
there was great placement for both of those, wasn't there?
Yeah, great ideas from
and
the guys.
Properly integrated into the show. See, what I hate are the really clunky ones, but these actually just worked as a genuine challenge that wasn't actually offensive to the viewers.
Yeah, it was fantastic, and actually really easy on the eye. As a result of that, you know, the KFC one was. They were both fantastic for very different reasons, but they worked incredibly well. And that's a great product that they've now got there. And Mark Burris, who did Apprentice, I thought was very strong. That'll be back next year. They've got some good content there. But the Olympics is going to be what drives the business.
And predictions for how James Warburton will do with 10? Then he'll start obviously in the new year with something of a mountain to climb.
Yeah, but he's starting as CEO first and foremost, and I think this notion that people become CEOs who've been sales directors because they know about the money is slightly outdated. I'm not saying James won't be a great success, I'm sure he will, but increasingly it's about the content. If you haven't got the content, you can't monetize it. And James's ability to create great content as the CEO will take time. It tends to take about 18 months, 12 months to 18 months to see that new content come through. So I think next year will be tough. I think he'll, with Kylie, will have to drive revenues on what they've got. But as the CEO, he needs to bring in the content that will allow Kylie and the team to go out and monetize it.
One of the things they've got coming out is Breakfast as a, you know, the new show. I think that, is that the working title book?
Yes,
is it?
Yeah.
Will you advertisers be supporting it?
Well, if it does an audience and it
so
adds
it's
something,
sort of thing.
Well, if it does something that's different, that adds to reach of audiences that we have out there, then undoubtedly we would support it as we do. You know, we don't have a support this, not support this. You know, there will be someone within our portfolio that show is absolutely right for.
You said you like The Apprentice. Any other favourites this year? Do you watch a lot of TV? If you had to pick, which would be your favourite show of the year?
I got into The Inbetweeners this year, which is probably a bit...
I love The Inbetweeners. The film opens this weekend in Australia.
Right, yeah, so I'll have to get along to that. So The Inbetweeners I loved, I thought that was excellent.
Robin, your favourite show of the year?
It would have to be Angry Boys, although it rated poorly. Yeah, no, for me, that was my favourite.
Brooke
Australian or otherwise?
On Australian television.
On Australian television. I'm ashamed to admit that I don't really watch a lot of Australian television. I'd have to say probably The Slap is the only thing that I've watched religiously on ABC iView.
That is all we have time for today. Thank you very much to Toby.
Pleasure, thank you.
And to Robin.
Cheers, Tim.
And to Brooke.
You're welcome.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded in the studios of CBS Interactive. See you next week. Toodle-pip.